Chapter 25. I realized quite suddenly that spring had come. It was late March and I'd been examining some sheep in a hillside fold. On my way down in the lee of a small pine wood, I leant my back against the tree and was aware all at once of the sunshine warm on my closed eyelids, the clamor of the larks, the muted sea sound of the wind in the high branches. And though the snow still lay in long runnels behind the walls and the grass was lifeless and winter yellowed, there was the feeling of change, almost of liberation, because unknowing I had surrounded myself with a carapace against the iron months, the relentless cold. It wasn't a warm spring, but it was dry with sharp winds which fluttered the white heads of the snowdrops and bent the clumps of daffodils on the village greens. In April the roadside banks were bright with the fresh yellow of the primroses. And in April, too, came the lambing. It came in a great tidal wave, the most vivid and interesting part of the veterinary surgeon's year, the zenith of the annual cycle, and it came as it always does when we were busiest with our other work. In the spring, the livestock were feeling the effects of the long winter. Cows had stood for months in the same few feet of byre, and were in dire need of the green grass and the sun on their backs, while their calves had very little resistance to disease. And just when we were wondering how we could cope with the coughs, the colds, the pneumonias, the acetonemias, the wave struck us. The odd thing is that for about 10 months of the year, sheep hardly entered into the scheme of our lives. They were just woolly things on the hills. But for the other 2 months, they almost blotted out everything else. First came the early troubles. The pregnancy toxemias, the prolapses. Then the lambings in a concentrated rush followed by the calcium deficiencies, the horrible gangrenous mastitis when the udder turns black and sloughs away, and the diseases which beset the lambs themselves, swayback, pulpy kidney, dysentery. Then the flood slackened, became a trickle, and by the end of May had almost dried up. Sheep became woolly things on the hills again. But in this first year I found a fascination in the work which had remained with me. Lambing, it seemed to me, had all the thrill and interest of calving without the hard labour. It was usually uncomfortable in that it was performed in the open, either in draughty pens improvised from straw bales and gates, or more often, out in the fields. It didn't seem to occur to the farmers that the ewe might prefer to produce her family in a warm place, or that the vet may not enjoy kneeling for an hour in his shirt sleeves in the rain. But the actual job was as easy as a song. After my experiences in correcting the malpresentations of calves, it was delightful to manipulate these tiny creatures. Lambs are usually born in twos or threes, and some wonderful mix-ups occur. Tangles of heads and legs all trying to be the first out, and it is the vet's job to sort them around and decide which leg belonged to which head. I reveled in this. It was a pleasant change to be for once stronger and bigger than my patient. But I didn't overstress this advantage. I have not changed the opinion I formed then, that there are just two things to remember in lambing: cleanliness and gentleness, and the lambs. All young animals are appealing, but the lamb has been given an unfair share of charm. The moments come back, of a bitterly cold evening when I delivered twins on a wind-scarred hillside. The lambs shaking their heads convulsively, and within minutes one of them struggling upright and making its way unsteady, knock-kneed, towards the other, while the other followed resolutely on its knees. The shepherd, his purpled, weather-roughened face almost hidden by the heavy coat which muffled him to his ears, gave a slow chuckle.
How the hell do they know?
He had seen it happen thousands of times, and he still wondered. So do I. And another memory of 200 lambs in a barn on a warm afternoon. We were inoculating them against pulpy kidney, and there was no conversation because of the high-pitched protests of the lambs and the unremitting deep baaing from nearly 100 ewes milling anxiously round outside. I couldn't conceive how these ewes could ever get their own families sorted out from that mass of almost identical little creatures. It would take hours. It took about 25 seconds. When we had finished injecting, we opened the barn doors and the outpouring lambs were met by a concerted rush of distraught mothers. At first the noise was deafening, but it died away rapidly to an occasional bleat as the last stray was rounded up. Then, neatly paired off, the flock headed calmly for the field. Through May and early June, my world became softer and warmer. The cold wind dropped, and the air, fresh as the sea, carried a faint breath of the thousands of wild flowers which speckled the pastures. At times, it seemed unfair that I should be paid for my work. For driving out in the early morning with the fields glittering under the first pale sunshine, and the wisps of mist hanging on the high tops,